All right, 1 hour to go here on Bettin' Woods this morning. Having an absolute blast in here talking baseball with Tim Flannery. Joins the program today with Ben being out. He'll be back tomorrow. I could do this, honestly, for another couple hours easily. It's so much fun. Today has flown by. But you were just telling the story about the Hoffman family, who obviously is very beloved here in San Diego. And Glenn, third base coach for a long, long time. Yeah. And so you guys had a little rivalry on and off the field.
In a very special way, because we grew up in the same area up in Anaheim, and even Trevor was just a little brat. He was like 8 or 9 or whatever when Glenn was in high school, and Glenn was a great basketball player, number one pick of the Red Sox, and I found his bat. When you get a bat contract when you get to the big leagues, or when you sign and you're a top pick, and you get all of a sudden you got a bat with your Louisville Slugger with your autograph on it, and I go, wow, this is
something.
Well, I found one of his at Donna's house, so I
your wife Donna.
I took it down to Home Run Park and hit for about 8 hours putting quarters in, shattered it. It was all, and I took it back to Donna. I go, here's your boyfriend's bat. And I used to tell this to the players. When Glenn would go out to third, I would yell out just enough so our players could hear, not Glenn. I go, I stole your woman, and I'm coming after your sign.
It's just my favorite. It is just my favorite thing.
And when I said earlier that everybody had a camera on everybody to steal the signs, and I'll tell you why we knew that, because we would do this propaganda warfare thing where Glenn would put, like, if they had a hit-and-run sign on, he would put their hit-and-run sign on, but then put mine on top of it. And I'm looking, I go, wait a minute.
They got mine.
That's my sign. You know, and you realize that when you find that, I remember the Cubs in spring training, we had people listening, we had people walking around, they had a camera on me every night. So as easy as my signs were, I always had something. If I started with it, nothing ever is on. And nobody's going to think just because I end on the belt and I go, buh, 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 that means bunt. But that's the major league. You can speak 6 languages and you can be the most intelligent man in the world, but if you can't communicate, you're not doing your job.
That's exactly right. The art of third base coaching is amazing. The thought of going out there and I asked you at the break, you know, what were you more nervous to do? Were you more nervous to play? All right, Flan, you're in the lineup today, leading off, playing second base against the Reds. Or, all right, Flan, it's, you know, game 6 of the World Series, and get out there and steal us a run or two if you can. I can't even imagine either of them, honestly. But players, once you're in the game, you're in the game. Yeah, you're in it. And, yeah, once you see the first pitch, all right, time to party. When you're coaching, it's a little bit different. I get so nervous watching my son play and coaching my son. I just wring my hands. So, mm-hmm. I mean, these are your guys. You come up with them through spring training. You teach them. You coach them. You shoulder to cry on all of it. Mm-hmm. Every counselor, marriage counselor, everything. Absolutely. And then, you know, you've got to make sure you guys win that ball game. And you're a huge part of it over there at third.
It's, to me, was one of the most – look, it's not for – if you line up 9 coaches and say, who wants to coach third, 8 guys are stepping back.
Yeah.
It can get vicious over there, and you can get run out of town and have to move and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it, because people don't understand it. But if you can get your players to think like you and what you're thinking about, it's a lot easier. Again, up there, you got to know your team. You got to know who's hot. You got to know the arms and who can run. But we also had the 8th hitter and a pitcher. It was time. Well, you would gamble down there because they're going to walk everybody to get to the pitcher. Yep. And a rally back then with the pitcher is usually a 3. That's a big rally. And now with everybody with professional hitters, a rally could go on forever. And it's maybe even a little easier where you can just hold guys and say, hey, you got professional hitters coming up. Let them go. But when I went, first of all, I did 5 years coaching third in the minor leagues. When you're managing in the minor leagues, you're coaching third, and that's how you learn to coach third, because you'll realize, well, I got to put the contact play on, or I should have jammed him because the other manager's not going to let this guy hit. So you learn all of that, and you make all the crazy mistakes, and then. You know, I did 7 years here in San Diego coaching third, and you, look, it's there's no easy way to do it. And then I did 8 up there, but I love it. It was like playing every day for me, you know, and
Yeah, you were way into it. I mean, you're one of the most demonstrative, well-known, you know, best in the business type third base coaches.
Well, I went to San Francisco and I left everything. I mean, I left Sandy. I was waking up in somebody's house. I was renting on a floor with no furniture in the fog the first few years. I'm going, what did I do?
What am I doing?
And then it started happening with the young players coming up. But I would always take them. We had a day in spring training that I would get them all together and walk from base to base to base and explain what I'm thinking and what we're trying to do here. But I usually get them together and said, you know, you guys, I've watched you lift weights all winter long and run the stadiums and get strong. And now you come to spring training and I hear you hitting down in those cages. I hear you're hitting early in the morning and you're hitting soft toss. All of that to get on base. Now, these defenders, I'm watching, the pitchers are watching, they're working out all winter, and they're looking at videos as you as a hitter. They're doing everything they can to keep you off base. And now there's eight guys with gloves and a guy with a mitt, and they're taking 100 ground balls a day, fly balls every day, to keep you from getting on base. So being on base must be pretty important. That's how it would start.
Yeah. Nobody wants to go out and do base running drills ever.
That's how you win.
Yeah, you want ground balls, you want to hit, you want soft toss.
Absolutely.
It's the margins.
And what I really love about Mike Shildt, not to mention he's a great baseball man. He's a great baseball man. And what he did in St. Louis before he didn't get along with the metric man or whoever up there. It's just wonderful that he came here to San Diego. But what he did this year at spring training, because you can see it, even though they might be bunting sometimes on their own at the wrong time when you want them to hit, you can teach that later, because he addressed situational hitting. He addressed it every time you come up. There's a situation that you have to perform in, and the pitcher knows what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So he's not going to give you the pitch to do it. And you can just see how disciplined they are and how they're moving runners. And I remember I would always say on, you know, Twitter, which, you know, back when I had my Twitter rant, and I'm still not going to apologize. Only thing I apologize for that is I was so mad I didn't spell traitor right.
Somebody got you for it.
Yeah. I was just learning about the internet. That's a whole nother joke. We have a
he
little.
He just got an iPhone, by the way. I had a flip phone like 6 weeks ago.
I was Josie Wells of the flip phone.
Yeah, 100%.
I texted you yesterday and it lit up blue.
Yeah,
it's not green.
He got himself an iPhone.
But, you know, I wasn't going to apologize anymore for getting fired, getting run out of town, and winning three world championships. And that was what my point was. But, you know what, Mike is doing here is just fantastic.
Do you know Shildt at all?
We know each other. I didn't ever worked with him. I was, you know, in different dugouts.
Sure.
But he's got him believing, and the players, once they see it, they all become now one tangible thing that they know how to move runners. They know how to get guys in. And now this is really weird because I believe the game is so sacred. I believe and you'll hear me say it and people don't want to hear it, but I said it in an all-star game when Heath Bell came running in Arizona and did a pop-up slide.
Yeah.
I didn't know I said it out loud. I just said there's two kinds of players, the humble one and the one about to become that. And Joey Votto turns around, looks at me, goes, where did you learn that? And I took my hat off. I go, hey, bro, I didn't just show up looking like this.
I earned this.
Yeah. I mean, and this team is fun to watch, and I think because they are one unit, and that's how you win. And in San Francisco, we weren't always the best team talent-wise. We were the strongest team together rather than our individual parts.
Talking to Tim Flannery here on Ben and Woods this morning. This is such good stuff, Flan. I wanted to ask you about those teams because you guys went through the weird even-year Giants success. And you know, one time is, oh, that's weird that happened. Twice, three times is wild. It's wild. So when you guys were going through that, I mean, you won it in 10, Didn't make the playoffs in 11, is that right? Yeah. Walk us through the what you guys were feeling. Like, the World Series hangover clearly is a real thing for you guys.
How did you start those next seasons on those even years? You're like, well, you know, last year was rough, but it's an even year.
There would always be so much hoopla, you know, and I finally got
tired of it.
Kyberg told me to zip it up there because I dropped the gladiator line. The time for honoring ourselves is soon coming to an end.
That's
we start getting, you know, but this ball club, that ball club, and what the key is, and I think I'm seeing it here, is you get guys that have been veterans like a Marco Scudero or a Hunter Pence who didn't. Have never won, and when they get a chance to win,
they're hungry.
They get it, and they become better people and better players together. And there's nothing like the brotherhood that you have. And you come in, and you know that you're the world champions, and you know they're going to shoot for you. But it was always just and it's the characters that they had up there and the great pitching. I mean,
pitching was unreal.
Pitching was unreal. And that's this team. If you can get at the trade deadline, you get, you definitely always need, I always think you win championships with bench and bullpen. Tony Kubek told me that 100 years ago, and I still watched it over the years. You've got to get pitching because you got, minimum, you got 1,400 innings you got to eat, and somebody's got to eat them. But if you can get guys that have had really careers but never had a chance to win, when they get a part of that, and that's what Brian Sabian did up there, he would get guys at the trade deadline that really made a difference and wanted to win, and it just was a combination thing.
The back and forth, though, had to make you insane and Boach insane. Win one, down. Win again, down.
The rosters didn't change a ton. Yeah. All the core players were still there.
Yeah, was it just the hangover, the grind of a 162 plus all those games and just watching Padre games in June takes a lot out of you as a fan. My blood pressure's up. You know, I'm pacing the house. I'm snacking like crazy because this team's making me insane. I can't even imagine, you know, being a player or a coach through that.
I think Brian Sabian's son walked through after. I would always run. I would go up to my locker. I needed a moment of silence and thank the Creator for this, allowing it. But Brian Sabian's son walked through and he sees his dad just weeping, and I'd be puking. I'd be vomiting because it was emotional, and you wouldn't know how heavy it was until after the fact. Wow. You know. And I remember his son said, I had no idea the magnitude of it.
Wow.
You know? It's special. It really is. It's something that I really would love to see. I would love to see this club, look, I don't like individual stars because it doesn't work, you know, and that's just,
it's not basketball, you know, honestly. And it's, you're right. And I like good players. I like great players. I like guys that are entertainers too. I think the entertainment part of the game is great. But this team certainly feels different than last year's team and the year before.
It looks different. And from as a fan, I'm proud of them. I'm and Schilt and the coaches, the staff, and Timmy Lieber's a good third base coach. He was a great first base coach for a lot of years, and went over there, and he's doing, and you've got to make decisions. And when I went to San Francisco, I said, I'm going there to win or go home. I'm not going to live on a guy's floor in the fog if we're not, you know. So I was making decisions I thought were, it was chancy at times, but look, anybody, and I remember the first month I was there, one of the owners, Peter McGowan, rest in peace, he was a beautiful man, but we were at a banquet, and I went to the bathroom. He goes, well, you got another guy thrown out today.
Oh, no.
And I had a couple glasses of wine at the time when I was drinking. Thank God I've stopped that. But
yes,
I earned it. And I looked at him. I go, Peter, if you wanted safety first, you should have hired a school crossing guard.
Oh, my God, oh, man. I can't even imagine.
And Timmy Leeper made and you're going to make the right decision and still get booed out of the ballparks and things like that. But when you know you've made the right decision, and I would make my decisions on if I could sleep. I want to be able to sleep that night. And Leap made one in L.A. that I would have sent him because there was a, you know, the left fielder, outfielder's arm was like a 40, which is below average. Shortstop made a great pick, made a perfect throw. Yeah. You also got the runner. Anytime the ball's down left field line, you got a runner running in the baseline, so you got to bring that into it. So once in a while, you got to tip your hat to the guys that made a great cutoff play, but you're not guaranteed just because you hold guys at third that they're going to score.
100%. I mean, I tend to kind of err on the side of aggression too. Be aggressive, make them make plays. Tim Flannery joins us. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. Got about 45 minutes left. I can't get enough stories. Who knows what direction this will take next, but stay right here. It's 97.3 The Fan. Flan, you got rave reviews coming in via text message, via the chat. You really knocked it out of the park with these stories today. We're joined by Tim Flannery here.
I wanted to do at the bottom of the hour, final segment. Let's do a little Q&A.
A little Q&A action.
I had a few questions. If you're in the YouTube chat,
fire away.
Questions. We got a post up on X as well. Leave your questions for Flan.
We were talking about earlier off the air bunting, you know, and I've you lean into a bit after a while. So anytime a Padre bunts and it's successful, my Twitter blows up. How'd you like that bunt, Woodsy? And I'm like, look, man, I'm not, again, for the record, I'm not against the bunt. I'm against my three-hole hitter chasing one run in the fifth when he's scorching hot, you know, but that's the way he plays the game, and I understand that.
And that's that mentality that they're working on, and they want to do it so much
so bad to help the team.
Absolutely.
Right? Which inherently is a great thing. Tell everybody the story of the Giants about Bruce Bochy screaming at you, thinking that you're putting these bunts on.
Yeah, in 2012, I mean, the pitching we had, and I used that quote earlier that Quadi said, we're going to San Francisco, it's going to be cold, windy, it's going to be 2-1.
Yeah.
And early in the game in Colorado, Scudero sacrifice bunt like the second inning, and Boach is screaming at me, and this has happened now like five straight days. I go, I'm not putting it on. And then I told him, I go, I just let you know, they had a team meeting without you, Boach.
It's unreal.
And they decided that they want the pitchers to have a one-run lead because of the amazing pitching that the Giants had.
So let me get this, just to get on the record, Bruce Bochy, one of the greatest managers of all time, was not a big fan of the, well, it's situational. There's a time and place for the sacrifice bunt. When he's watching his guys go up on their own and lay one down, the guys actually came together without Bruce Bochy in the room and said, looked around and said, hey, we need to bunt more. We need to get a lead.
Let's get a lead.
And let these cats go out and pitch with it, even if it's a one run. Why didn't those guys think, well, we're pretty good, let's let him pitch with a 4-run lead by not giving away outs in the fourth inning or second inning.
In Colorado.
In Colorado.
But I just said, hey, that's something you got to worry about, Boach. I don't know. I mean, these guys are bunting. I'm not telling them this. I mean, they had a meeting without you, and this is what they want to do.
That's unreal.
And Boach has always been that player's manager. He'll let the guy, give him enough rope until he has to stop it. But it worked out.
That's so, so funny. How much... I know it's different. It was different when you coached and certainly different when you played. How involved is your perception of how involved is the big league manager these days as it pertains to things like that? The bunt, the hit and run, obviously. I think the manager probably puts most hit and runs on. But the steal, you know, things like that. Because we have seen some goofy base running at times. When your team is struggling maybe to score runs, you do find guys trying to stretch a little bit. They're trying to make something happen, mm-hmm. which, again, inherently is a good thing. But a baseball player left to his own devices, Flan, is not always the best recipe for success.
Well, not all of them know what their strength is.
Right.
And at the big league level, because they get here sometimes quick. But you know, your team identity will, and your pitching. When you're pitching and playing defense, and I always bring back the Padres 2010 team. That was the scariest team because they pitched. They would beat you 2-1.
Yeah.
We beat them at the last day of the season. But that's how we were. You know, you pitched, you played defense. You got to know what your strengths are as a ball club. And Boach was great at it, you know, but he was never a guy that wanted to play small ball early. But it was different then, you know, once they brought 9 professional hitters together and there was no 8th hitter, no pitcher. But he mentioned it to me just a few weeks ago that I took it. I was the bunt doctor. I have a little bubblegum card where I'm doing a bunt, right? And if a guy screwed up, I would put that in his locker and say, you have an appointment with the bunt doctor tomorrow. I said, you go to a lawyer, you get a card from a lawyer, you go from there. I go, here's my card. I'm a bunt doctor. And, you know, you're killing me. You got to get it down.
Get it
I'm
down.
Getting beat up. You know, because Boach,
the rare occasion he would call a bunt and they didn't get it down, then it was your ass.
Oh, all the time.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
And then when he did call me to come back up to San Francisco, he goes, "Hey, I'm not yelling at my coaches anymore." I go, "Bull, that's baloney." I go, "But I've had a few years off, so I'm ready for it."
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
and then after we won the third one, I go, "I'm out of here.
That's done. I'm done." For you, watching him win another one in Texas, were you surprised he went back?
I was surprised, but I got a text message around Christmas before he went. He said, "Hey, I see that your band's just killing it. You're playing. You're doing great." He goes, "Man, did you see those playoff games? I miss those games. I miss that feeling." I just texted him back on my flip phone. "I'm very fine coaching from the couch, and I am not coming to Texas."
That's amazing.
And then when I came to Fantasy League, he knew I was coming over to do Fantasy League. I get a text. He goes, "If I knew you wanted to work, I'd brought you to Texas." I go, I got 5 days in me, and that is it, folks.
Would he have asked you if you didn't reach out ahead of time saying, "I'm not doing it"? Would he have tried to get you to go out to Texas?
Well, I knew the text messages were that. That was the opening.
That's what that was.
Yeah, that was the opening. That's how we did it the last time as well, too, you know.
Now, all right.
But think about this. The guy that fired me, he could only bring one coach, and the ownership up there now tells me. They go, he said he has to have you. And I go, isn't it crazy? But that was our relationship,
yeah.
You know. I played with him for 5 years, and we were running mates, you know, off the field before social media.
Yeah, of course.
And Boach was just wonderful. And he was a great catcher. Everybody wanted to pitch to him. And you just see all the managers. And he has the great knack of the bullpen. You saw that he had the worst bullpen in the league. And then when you you give him a day.
They were terrible.
But when you give him a day off because of media in the playoffs and World Series, he plugs in a starter. He plugs in a couple of that. You know, he's genius at that.
They were horrid. And they have some good players. They got some good young players. They've had a lot of energy. Their bullpen is atrocious, and I don't think they're going to go very far.
Right.
Look at them now.
And then once they gave him those extra days off.
Yeah, and you get that fifth starter then becomes, you know.
And that's what they did. We had Lincecum coming out of the bullpen in San Francisco. You had, you know, Kane a couple times. Zito pitched in 2012 out of the bullpen those last few games. When, you know, that's just for managing. You only get good at like coaching third by coaching third. I told these guys at the break, you know, I did it 20 years, 5 in the minor leagues and 15 in the big leagues. You know, the San Francisco people saw me the last, you know, "You're the best third base coach ever." I go, "Yeah, you should have seen me the first 15 years because you there's no way somebody can tell you." I mean, I had great teachers, Jimmy Williams, Joey Malfitano, Jimmy Davenport would take me out and on positioning. And I just loved it. I loved it. But, you know, there's nights that a perfect example was we had Pablo on first base, Buster on first base, nobody out in San Francisco. Pablo hits a ball, left center field gap. That's usually a no-brainer. I send Buster with nobody out. He gets thrown out at the plate, perfect relay. Bum loses 2-0. I went out on television and told the whole world that I lost the game. Terrible mistake on my part. And the players saw it, and they go, they saw what I had to go through. It was a birthday night for me or for my daughter, and I couldn't even take them out in San Francisco because people at that time
would have killed you after that.
You know, when we first went up there, you know, they were yelling, "Go back to San Diego!"
Oh, God.
You know, and then when we would come to San Diego, "You guys are traitors!" So we had nowhere to go. You know, so it took a while for us to win them over up there. But yeah, it's a crazy, beautiful game.
It sure is, man. All right, we got one more segment with Flan coming up next. We'll do some Q&A with Flan, certainly. But now, call now for a pair of tickets to John Fogerty at the Rady Shell, September 4th. Tickets on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Call 833-288-0973. We'll give them to the fourth caller here on Ben and Woods this morning. 833-288-0973. If you want a pair of tickets to go see John Fogerty. I bet you're a Fogerty fan.
Yeah, I do. You can't look at him more than a second and a half. And that's true. He's, you know, those bizarre, freaky artists.
Yeah.
My pedal steel player, Doug Pettibone's a rock star and plays with all these guys. He goes, yeah, he only allows you to look at him for
one of those. He's like Ben.
Yeah.
He's just like Ben. Do not look the artist in the eye.
Yeah, just a second and a half.
Second and a half. And then you got to look away. Flan is not
freaky.
That way. Not that way at all. All right, call now. We got one more segment with Flan. You got any questions? Throw them up in the chat. Shoot us a text or a tweet at Ben and Woods. We'll get to all those next. We'll wrap up the show. All right, final segment of the day today. Actually disappointed to see the show coming to an end. We'll be back with a little Q&A with Tim Flannery right after this quick check of traffic. All right, so last segment, Flan, we got a couple questions rolling in. A lot of people just wanted to express their appreciation for you and let you know what a great job you did today. I've certainly had a blast talking to you, as I always do. I always feel bad. My wife makes fun of me because if I see Flan somewhere, I just beeline towards him.
I know, and the other day at the party, she thought that, I go, no, I was telling her my daughter went to extremes because she can't just throw a party. My daughter's got to have the best party of
that
all time.
That was really something else for
and
a four-year-old.
You were talking, and she thought that you were wearing, no one can wear me out talking the game of baseball or having a good soul like yourself.
I walked in and I went, oh, cool, a four-year-old's birthday party, right? And I said, oh, there's Flan, and I just beeline. I sat right next to him. I was like, all right, let's fire it up. Let's go. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
So good, man. Always appreciate you and your love of the game. And you've really reminded me, being around you the last couple of years, you've really reminded me to remember a few things about baseball. And number one, that there is a lot of soul involved in this game. It is a very, very difficult game. It's a very challenging game. These players are incredibly human and they are incredibly infallible and you fail so, so much. Right. It has helped me, Flan, be a better coach, be a better dad. So I thank you for that. All the lessons. Flan's a guy you just want to be around. You know, you just want to be around to pick up your energy. And thanks so much for coming in today. You had a gig last night, man. You could be sleeping right now, sitting out drinking some coffee, doing whatever, but you came in for us. We really appreciate it.
Trying to figure out why everybody's up in the middle of the night.
It's gnarly.
Musician, for Christ's sake.
Well, the reviews have been so good. So just so you know, you crushed it, and now this is going to be happening more often.
Well, my wife will be the first one to tell you that I'm really good in small doses.
2 hours, perfect, right? That's exactly. You know, my wife says the same thing about me. She says the exact same thing about me. So we had a couple questions, Paulie. Get one. Get the first one from our buddy Hector.
Our boy Hector. He says, Tim Flannery, best non-superstar infielder that you ever coached?
Brandon Crawford up there it was just the best all-around player for me. He came up as a defender, learned how to hit, best base runner. If I said not the fastest, but him and Steve Finley were two of the best base runners ever. They always gave you the same, no matter. I finally snapped on Bonds, and not in a bad. Well, I just said, look, I can't. If you're going to get on second base, I can't give you a mood ring. I can't make a decision if you're in a good mood and you feel like running. I got to have you run the same all the time. And they always did that.
That's amazing. Watching Brandon Crawford play shortstop is staggering. I've watched a couple of videos of him out at spring training. I'm pretty sure you were the one hitting him fungos, but he's messing around, having fun, going between his legs, behind his back. He just was ungodly good. How much work did he put in?
You know, every day they had great. You know, Ronnie Wotus is probably the. I was hitting him, but Ronnie Wotus was the coach, and they had these great, as all infielders do. You've got to have a program that you stick to, because this is a game of going the distance over 8-9 months, and your prep, your schedule, your routine is everything to get through a whole season when the season's so long. Somebody can get pregnant in spring training and have a baby before the season's even over.
And you forget. Yeah, you don't even realize. Paulie, any other questions you got over there for Flan?
Yeah, so you guys are going to be honored. The 84 team will be honored on Wednesday. Have we even said what this guy's doing on Wednesday?
Oh, yeah, so you're going to be singing the national anthem at Petco Park. Just you and the guitar?
Me and the guitar. I did it five times up in San Francisco with Phil Lesh and Bobby Weir.
Amazing.
I wasn't even a deadhead, but when they asked me to sing it, I did it in uniform before playoff and World Series games, because we won every single time. And then I'd go coach third, and I knew the other club. I was right next to St. Louis line, because they all lined up on the line, and here I'm singing with Weir and Lesh the anthem, and then I'd go coach third, and I can just hear these guys saying, well, that's a different type of third base coach. We don't have a third base coach that does that.
Yeah.
You know, but I did it a couple times solo as well. It's as my mom used to say. When I was Bo's, your son's age, I used to call it the baseball song. It's actually a country song.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, speaking of '84, Adam in our YouTube chat asks, the infamous brawl in Atlanta in 1984, was that a big catalyst that jump started your run to the playoffs?
Absolutely. We were 6 games up with 6 weeks left. We knew that Perez hit Allen Wiggins with the first pitch on purpose. We thought it was more intimidation to try to, because they were chasing us. And that was a day that, and a fight. And it's crazy. I still am a little sore, but sometimes when you wake up from what happened, I mean, we all got beat up. Bavak was in the stands beating up the season ticket holders.
It was the best.
I mean, it was the craziest day, and they didn't, it was like 3 times. And I mean, they always show it to the visiting players in Atlantis to this day.
Yeah.
And when the Giants came in there and they saw what was going on, and they were watching this video, they go, you know, after about the 6th, 7th time trying, they go, didn't anybody give any warnings?
Right.
I go, yeah. We yelled out, look out!
The craziest part of that to me is the fact that, who was the Atlanta skipper at the time?
Torrey.
Was it Joe Torrey?
Joe Torrey.
How much did they hate Pasquale Perez? They sent him to the plate 4 times. They hated him so much that they're like, nah, go ahead. Like, you got us into this mess. You're going to get yours too, which is insane to think about in today's day and age of protect, coddle. Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, I got a $20 million a year player. You're damn right I'm going to coddle him. That's my investment. Back then, it was like, no, bro, you hit Wiggins, you're going to get yours. They left him in the game to get dotted.
And we couldn't get him.
Couldn't get him.
You know? And then Lefferts got him. And then it was just 3 times, 4 times, the benches empty. They didn't finish the game until they took everybody back up into the old Atlanta clubhouse. And it's like, you know, the F troop or the fort, the big forts when the Indians were attacking, they would put that big old piece of wood in the middle.
Yeah.
They locked us in before they played the game, finished the game, you know. And I got beat up and fined $500 just for being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I actually showed Bo that video because I tell Bo, I'm like, that's Tim Flannery, bro. Jesse's grandfather is a legend. He's a legend. He's a big leaguer. And he's like, he was a Padre? Like, he just doesn't register. And I'm like, hang on, watch this fight. And I'm like, look, there he is. And it's funny because you resembled at that time my late father-in-law, Lauren Nancaro.
Yes.
And the same blonde hair, and then, you know, a little area on top.
We would be around town, and people would come up to me, and they would come up to him and mistake us. And I had a lot. I wish I had a dollar for every time somebody says, hey, what's the weather going to be like today?
Or Lauren said, why'd you send him last night?
Yeah, right.
why couldn't you hit that fastball last night?
Yeah, I have a lot of stories about Lauren. He was a wonderful man, just the best human I think I've ever come across. And it's kind of like our lives were so parallel. We would run into each other at 2 o'clock in the morning in Arizona. So coming out of the bathroom, and there he is, and just a spectacular guy.
Well, now for it to come as full circle as it has, it's not lost on me, certainly. excuse me, getting a chance to coach your incredible grandson Jesse. Was hanging with him over the weekend, and you know, I was talking to his dad Travis, your son-in-law, and he's like, he needs to be around more boys. He's surrounded by girls. He needs to be boys. Jesse is he's 3 feet tall. He's my leadoff hitter and is the most tenacious, fiercest kid. I can't wait to coach him next year and see what he turns into as well. And it's just been awesome, man. Been awesome.
If you can get somebody, and you've done that with Jesse, because I'm not the guy that wants to do that, sure, yet.
Which makes sense. Know? Yeah,
I want to just protect him, if anything, just so they get the love of the game. And when you can love the game so much, then practice is nothing. You take 100 ground balls every day because you love it. You hit all day because you love it. You be in the, you know, we signed in 1979 or 1976. No, 1978 for, you know, $500 a month. We were riding 20-hour bus rides in the Texas League, you know, $6 a day to eat on. Nobody got into the game because there was money. We and I remember my father-in-law, Donna, my wife's dad, I got so mad at him, but now I look back, I couldn't. He said, he can't make a living playing baseball. And he was right back then, you know. And I still can't believe you let me marry that woman.
Yeah, no, no question about it. I mean, obviously the game has changed tremendously, but thing I love about you is that you still love the game,
love it, and
love to watch the game. And obviously, I think everybody wanted to know kind of your opinions before we go. We got a few minutes left about this Padres team this year. I'm of the opinion, and I've been wrong many times before, but I'm of the opinion that, you know, this team deserves a shot. They really do. They deserve a shot, and they don't have the pieces necessarily yet.
Well, that was one of the questions that we did get about the current Padres team. You said you're watching every night. Mm-hmm. You know what it takes 3 times to get to a World Series. He goes, do you think this team has what it takes to get to October to make a run?
It's being built. I'm watching it become together, and what you're not going to score when you get to those playoffs and World Series and stuff. You're not going to have 10 runs going up. So you've got to be able to pitch. You got to play defense. You've got to do the things that they're doing. They're even overdoing it because they see it worked. You've got to be able to move runners because you're going to be facing the best pitching in the game those last few games. You've got to be able to do the little things. And the game, I said it earlier, is so sacred. And I did as a coach, as a manager, if you get somebody to actually say, I'm going to now look for a pitch to move a runner from second base to third with nobody out, usually the game honors you. You not only get the guy over, you get a base hit. And I remember fans down here before I went off on them on Twitter, and I don't apologize. And what they would say, what do you mean? Our only hope is for productive outs. I said, you get 27 outs, you might as well make them your friends.
Yeah, you have to. And that's the thing, this ability that they've shown at times to string 4, 5, 6, 7 hits together. Look, in when you get to the big games in October, you also have to have a guy that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, because sometimes it's really hard to do string six or seven hits together against the world's best pitching on the biggest stage. That said, they have that ability. They do have guys that are hitting the ball out of the ballpark as well. They're rounding into form. They just don't. They're lacking a little bit, which is okay. It's early July. There's still time to fix it. I do think this team deserves a shot at it this year.
When you get down there, and hopefully they'll get a little help, whatever help they need, you know, find the right chemistry as well as the player.
Massively important.
And when you get in those playoffs and you see you're knocking on the door and you start seeing the door open up, it's almost like you want to get on your knees and just thank whoever's in charge here, that they feel that you honor the game, you've prepared yourself well enough for these things to happen. We never say, you know, it was always, oh my God.
We did it. We're here. The door's
opening up. It's our turn. And when that starts happening collectively, There's no stopping you.
I love it, man. Tim Flannery, thank you so much for coming in today. We had such a blast.
Thanks,
and again, come on out to Petco Park on Wednesday. They're going to be honoring the 84 team. Kick Terry Kennedy in the shin for me, please.
Hey, I traded for you.
I know you did. That's why I love
you. We call him Oscar the Grouch. He was always
the grouchiest dude ever. Flan, you crushed it today. Thanks so much. We'll be back tomorrow.
Thanks, Paulie.
Benny has got to follow that.
Well, you guys do it every
good
day.
Tomorrow. Good luck.
I'm good in small doses.
Attaboy. Thanks so much. We'll be back tomorrow. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Have a great day, everybody. All right, final segment of the day today. Actually disappointed to see the show coming to an end. We'll be back with a little Q&A with Tim Flannery right after this quick check of traffic. All right, so last segment, Flan, we got a couple questions rolling in. A lot of people just wanted to express their appreciation for you and let you know what a great job you did today. I've certainly had a blast talking to you, as I always do. I always feel bad. My wife makes fun of me because if I see Flan somewhere, I just beeline towards him.
I know, and the other day at the party, she thought that I go, no, I was telling her my daughter went to extremes because she can't just throw a party. My daughter's got to have the best party of
that
all time.
That was really something else for
and
a four-year-old.
You were talking, and she thought that you were wearing, no one can wear me out talking the game of baseball or having a good soul like yourself.
I walked in and I went, oh, cool, a four-year-old's birthday party, right? And I said, oh, there's Flan, and I just beeline. I sat right next to him. I was like, all right, let's fire it up. Let's go. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
So good, man. Always appreciate you and your love of the game. And you've really reminded me, being around you the last couple of years, you've really reminded me to remember a few things about baseball. And number one, that there is a lot of soul involved in this game. It is a very, very difficult game. It's a very challenging game. These players are incredibly human and they are incredibly infallible and you fail so, so much. Right. It has helped me, Flan, be a better coach, be a better dad. So I thank you for that. All the lessons. Flan's a guy you just want to be around. You know, you just want to be around to pick up your energy. And thanks so much for coming in today. You had a gig last night, man. You could be sleeping right now, sitting out drinking some coffee, doing whatever, but you came in for us. We really appreciate
trying to figure out why everybody's up in the middle of the night.
Really
I'm a musician, for Christ's sake.
Well, the reviews have been so good. So just so you know, you crushed it, and now this is going to be happening more often.
Well, my wife will be the first one to tell you that I'm really good in small doses.
2 hours, perfect, right? That's exactly. You know, my wife says the same thing about me. She says the exact same thing about me. So we had a couple questions, Paulie. Get one. Get the first one from our buddy Hector.
Our boy Hector. He says, Tim Flannery, best non-superstar infielder that you ever coached?
Brandon Crawford up there it was just the best all-around player for me. He came up as a defender, learned how to hit, best base runner. If I said not the fastest, but him and Steve Finley were two of the best base runners ever. They always gave you the same, no matter. I finally snapped on Bonds, and not in a bad. Well, I just said, look, I can't. If you're going to get on second base, I can't give you a mood ring. I can't make a decision if you're in a good mood and you feel like running. I got to have you run the same all the time. And they always did that.
That's amazing. Watching Brandon Crawford play shortstop is staggering. I've watched a couple of videos of him out at spring training. I'm pretty sure you were the one hitting him fungos, but he's messing around, having fun, going between his legs, behind his back. He just was ungodly good. How much work did he put in?
You know, every day they had great. You know, Ronnie Wotus is probably the. I was hitting him, but Ronnie Wotus was the coach, and they had these great. As all infielders do, you've got to have a program that you stick to because this is a game of going the distance over 8-9 months, and your prep, your schedule, your routine is everything to get through a whole season when the season's so long. Somebody can get pregnant in spring training and have a baby before the season's even over.
And you forget. Yeah, you don't even realize. Paulie, any other questions you got over there for Flan?
Yeah. So you guys are going to be honored. The 84 team will be honored on Wednesday. Have we even said what this guy's doing on
Wednesday? Oh, yeah. So you're going to be singing the national anthem at Petco Park. Just you and the guitar?
Me and the guitar. I did it five times up in San Francisco with Phil Lesh and Bobby Weir.
Amazing.
I wasn't even a deadhead, but when they asked me to sing it, I did it in uniform before playoff and World Series games because we won every single time. And then I'd go coach third, and I knew the other club. I was right next to St. Louis line because they all lined up on the line, and here I'm singing with Weir and Lesh the anthem, and then I'd go coach third, and I can just hear these guys saying, well, that's a different type of third base coach. We don't have a third base coach that does that.
Yeah.
You know, but I did it a couple times solo as well. It's, you know, it's as my mom used to say, when I was Bo's, your son's age, I used to call it the baseball song. It's actually a country song.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, speaking of 84, Adam in our YouTube chat asks, the infamous brawl in Atlanta in 1984, was that a big catalyst that jump-started
Absolutely.
Your run to the playoffs?
Absolutely. We were 6 games up with 6 weeks left. We knew that Perez hit Allen Wiggins with the first pitch on purpose. We thought it was more intimidation to try to, because they were chasing us. And that was a day that, and a fight. And it's crazy. I still am a little sore but sometimes when you wake up from what happened. I mean, we all got beat up. Bavak was in the stands beating up the season ticket holders.
It was the best.
I mean, it was the craziest day. And they didn't, it was like 3 times. And I mean, they always show it to the visiting players in Atlantis to this day.
Yeah.
And when the Giants came in there and they saw what was going on and they were watching this video, they go, you know, after about the 6th, 7th time trying, they go, didn't anybody give any warnings?
Right.
I go, yeah. We yelled out, look out!
The craziest part of that to me is the fact that, who was the Atlanta skipper at the time?
Torrey.
Was it Joe Torrey?
Joe Torrey.
How much did they hate Pasquale Perez? They sent him to the plate 4 times. They hated him so much that they're like, nah, go ahead. Like, you got us into this mess. You're going to get yours too, which is insane to think about in today's day and age of protect, coddle. Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, I got a $20 million a year player. You're damn right I'm going to coddle him. That's my investment. Back then, it was like, no, bro, you hit Wiggins, you're going to get yours. They left him in the game to get dotted.
And we couldn't get him.
Couldn't get him.
You know? And then Lefferts got him. And then it was just 3 times, 4 times the benches empty. They didn't finish the game until they took everybody back up into the old Atlanta clubhouse. And it's like, you know, the F troop or the fort, the big forts when the Indians were attacking, they would put that big old piece of wood in the middle.
Yeah.
They locked us in before they played the game, finished the game, you know, and I got beat up and fined $500 just for being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I actually showed Bo that video because I tell Bo, I'm like, that's Tim Flannery, bro. Jesse's grandfather is a legend. He's a legend. He's a big leaguer. And he's like, he was a Padre. Like, he just doesn't register. And I'm like, hang on, watch this fight. And I'm like, look, there he is. And it's funny because you resembled at that time my late father-in-law, Lauren Nancaro.
Yes.
And like the same him. Blonde hair and then, you know, a little area on top.
We would be around town and people would come up to me and they would come up to him and mistake us. And I wish I had a dollar for every time somebody says, hey, what's the weather going to be like today?
Or Lauren said, why'd you send him last night?
Yeah, right.
why couldn't you hit that fastball last night?
Yeah, I have a lot of stories about Lauren. He was a wonderful man, just the best human I think I've ever come across. And it's kind of like our lives were so parallel. We would run into each other at 2 o'clock in the morning in Arizona, so coming out of the bathroom, and there he is, and just a spectacular guy.
Well, now for it to come as full circle as it has, it's not lost on me, certainly. excuse me, getting a chance to coach. Your incredible grandson Jesse was hanging with him over the weekend, and you know, I was talking to his dad Travis, your son-in-law, and he's like, he needs to be around more boys. He's surrounded by girls. He needs to be boys. Jesse is he's 3 feet tall. He's my leadoff hitter and is the most tenacious, fiercest kid. I can't wait to coach him next year and see what he turns into as well. And it's just been awesome, man. It's been awesome.
If you can get somebody, and you've done that with Jesse, because I'm not the guy that wants to do that. Sure. Yet,
which makes sense. Know? Yeah,
I want to just protect him, if anything, just so they get the love of the game. And when you can love the game so much, then practice is nothing. You take 100 ground balls every day because you love it. You hit all day because you love it. You be in the, you know, we signed in 1979 or 1976. No, 1978 for, you know, $500 a month. We were riding 20-hour bus rides in the Texas League, you know, $6 a day to eat on. Nobody got into the game because there was money. We and I remember my father-in-law, Donna, my wife's dad, I got so mad at him, but now I look back, I couldn't. He said, he can't make a living playing baseball. And he was right back yeah. then, you know. And I still can't believe you let me marry that one, that right. woman.
Yeah, yeah, no question about it. I mean, obviously the game has changed tremendously. But thing I love about you is that you still love the game.
Love it. And
love to watch the game. And obviously I think everybody wanted to know kind of your opinions before we go. We got a few minutes left about this Padres team this year. I'm of the opinion, and I've been wrong many times before, but I'm of the opinion that, you know, this team deserves a shot. They really do. They deserve a shot, and they don't have the pieces necessarily yet.
Well, that was one of the questions that we did get about the current Padres team. You said you're watching every night. Mm-hmm. You know what it takes three times to get to a World Series. He goes, do you think this team has what it takes to get to October to make a run?
It's being built. I'm watching it become together, and what you do, you're not going to score when you get to those playoffs and World Series and stuff. You're not going to have 10 runs going up. So you've got to be able to pitch. You got to play defense. You've got to do the things that they're doing. They're even overdoing it because they see it worked. You've got to be able to move runners because you're going to be facing the best pitching in the game those last few games. You've got to be able to do the little things. And the game, I said it earlier, is so sacred. And I did as a coach, as a manager, if you get somebody to actually say, I'm going to now look for a pitch to move a runner from second base to third with nobody out, usually the game honors you. You not only get the guy over, you get a base hit. And I remember fans down here before I went off on them on Twitter, and I don't apologize. And what they would say, what do you mean? Our only hope is for productive outs. I said, you get 27 outs, you might as well make them your friends.
Yeah, you have to. And that's the thing, this ability that they've shown at times to string 4, 5, 6, 7 hits together. Look, in when you get to the big games in October, you also have to have a guy that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, because sometimes it's really hard to do string
Absolutely.
6 or 7
Absolutely.
Hits together against the world's best pitching on the biggest stage. That said, they have that ability. They do have guys that are hitting the ball out of the ballpark as well. They're rounding into form. They just don't. They're lacking a little bit, which is okay. It's early July. There's still time to fix it. I do think this team deserves a shot at it this year.
When you get down there, and hopefully they'll get a little help, whatever help they need, you know, find the right chemistry as well as the player.
Massively important.
And when you get in those playoffs and you see you're knocking on the door and you start seeing the door open up, it's almost like you want to get on your knees and just thank whoever's in charge here, that they feel that you honor the game, you've prepared yourself well enough for these things to happen. We never say, you know, it was always, oh my God.
We did it. We're here. The door's
opening up. It's our turn. And when that starts happening collectively, there's no stopping you.
I love it, man. Tim Flannery, thank you so much for coming in today. We had such a blast.
Thanks,
and again, come on out to Petco Park on Wednesday. They're going to be honoring the 84 team. Kick Terry Kennedy in the shin for me, please.
Hey, I traded for you.
I know you did. That's why I love
you. We call him Oscar the Grouch. He was always
grouchiest dude ever. Flan, you crushed it today. Thanks so much. We'll
blast.
Be back tomorrow.
Thanks Bobby.
Benny has got to follow that.
Well, you guys do it every
good
day.
Tomorrow. Good luck.
I'm good in small doses.
Attaboy. Thanks so much. We'll be back tomorrow. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Have a great day, everybody.